talk about my topic today, and it was funny, I usually talk about gratitude on the week of Thanksgiving, but this is an article that came across my desk, and I enjoy it because I really love Stephen Covey, I think, and of course he passed away, he was in a biking accident and died in a biking accident years back, but he's written so many phenomenal books, and obviously the most prolific one is his Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, and that book really helped change my life. It gave me new insight into things and the way to think about things that were so distinctly different than what my thinking was before I read the book. So I always appreciate people who can take my brain and twist it a little bit and give me some more insight that allows me to be a more sensitive, more aware human being in this world. And this article that I read was an interview that somebody did that by Todd Eliason. He did an interview with Stephen Covey back when he first introduced his next book, which was The Eighth Habit. So we're going to kind of go through this and do a review a little bit of Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. I know I did a book review on that years ago. Probably would deserve 7 weeks of book reviews on that one alone, just touching each habit because they're all so uniquely different and so incredibly critical for us. But this, let's just take a peek, just a highlight about Seven Habits. I believe probably a lot of you have read the book, because Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. I don't think it's an easy book to get through, so that's why perhaps it would serve for me to do a review of it, because it's very heady. And I mean by that, Stephen Covey was a very brilliant man, and you know, it comes across to, easy for intellectuals to read, but not easy for average intelligence to get through because it's so heavy. And I consider myself somebody who's pretty intelligent, and I remember struggling with the book myself. I would read about 25 pages, and I go, "Oops, I better start over because I'm lost already." I was already. Yeah, like almost daydreaming or going off in a direction because it was hard to dig through. But I did finally get through it. And he separates the book out. The Seven Habits, of course, are a book about how we become effective. And there's three major categories in the book. And the categories are number one, two, and three. The first three habits are about self-mastery. So it really is about how we can master ourselves, what we need to do to be better people, to take more control over our lives instead of being wandering generalities and become more meaningful specifics in our lives. And those three are, number one is to be proactive. And, of course, sometimes the easy way to really understand the habit is to look at the opposite. So opposite of being proactive is being reactive, right? In other words, don't live your life going through life reacting to things all the time. Take a cause on. Have your own voice be heard. Become part of a movement and be committed to being proactive, creating change in the world instead of just reacting to what the world throws at you. We're in a very reactionary time in our world today, both politically, socially, a lot of ways. It's time for us to be proactive, yeah, right? Take it on. So proactivity is a way to achieve self-mastery. The second habit is begin with the end in mind. In other words, set a goal. Have a directional. If you don't know where you're going, you're going to get exactly there, nowhere, because you don't know where you're going. So some of us take off to do things, and we're just like, well, I'm just kind of flying by the seat of my pants, and of course this category gets into: are you setting goals? Are you putting directions in your life? Are you committing to create something? You know, when we don't do that, we become a wandering generality instead of a meaningful specific, right? And we can look at our lives and say, wow, and this. By the way, this call today isn't about supporting you and getting depressed about your life. It's about supporting you and evaluating it, because life eval is very important. It's important. Like, I like to do it every day, every week. I like to say, okay, so what did I accomplish? What didn't I accomplish? Where could I have been better? How do I improve? The only way you get better is by evaluating what you're doing. so that you can change the bad habits into good habits, right? So this is about doing the same thing. So beginning with the end in mind, just like even looking at your business that you have, you know, where are you going to, are you committed to being a presidential director in your network marketing company, right? Are you committed to achieving a certain goal? Are you committing to, you know, having your own business? Are you committing to, what is your commitment? What is your goal? So you having, beginning with the end in mind is what, you have goals now that pull you to them instead of being pushed in a direction. Pulling works much more effectively than pushing. So begin with the end in mind. The third personal habit that he talks about in his book that is about, you know, your personal, you know, going from a personal or self-mastery, helping you move from dependence to independence, is put first things first, right? And the opposite of that would be being put second things first, right? So it's really about getting really clarity around priority. What's most important to us? You know, what are our most important core values? What's most important? What really turns us on? What's really a directional in our life? And spending our time on what? First things first, instead of allowing other priorities to seep into our other things seep into our life and take over, because maybe some of the priorities that are most important to us are tougher for us to accomplish. So we put them on a back burner because we don't like to be so challenged, and we just take the easy way out. Anyone raise their hand and knowing, oh, I've done that, Mary Jo. Well, I'm raising my hand too, so I'm there right with you. So those are the three habits that have to do, again, of the seven habits, those are the three that have to do with self-mastery. And then the next three habits in his book, Seven Habits, are ones that are more about public victory, like of teamwork and cooperation and communication. These are skill sets in teamwork, in working with others. And so the first one there is think win-win. So how do we think win-win? You know, we're almost, you know, raised up in a culture of win-lose. I win, you lose. You know, especially if you get competitive in sports, that can carry over. And I saw that in myself as I did self-evaluation in my 20s and 30s. I could see that I was so competitive in sports, it was almost like win-lose. I could see myself in games where it was like, oh, I had to win. I mean, there wasn't an alternative to it. It was I win, no matter what, I win. And does that serve you in life? Absolutely. I think you can be really driven, but how it diminishes the world for everybody else. So is there some solution that you can come from where everybody wins? And it's hard when you're competitive in sports. When you watch a football game, everybody doesn't win. Well, I'm going to suggest to you a football game, everybody can win. If you go out there and do the best you can, it doesn't matter what the final score is. You win because you performed at your highest level, right? And that's the victory that we have to start looking at. So think win-win. How do I allow somebody else to win? Why do I have to pummel somebody in order for me to win? Is there a way that we all can win? And instead of win-lose, I win, you lose. Or there are a lot of us out there, and people I've met too, that they'll lose just to allow somebody else to win. And it's really it's like you live your life in total self-sacrifice. Well, then the world's not getting to hear your voice either, so that's a problematic. So think win-win. It's a great strategy for all of us to really develop and understand. The next habit, again, that's about all about teamwork, cooperation, and communication is seek first to understand, then to be understood. I just used this exact principle yesterday in church when we had a new man that gave our Sunday school class, teaching our Sunday school class, and he talked about his anger that he gets, and he says, I know when people talk to me, I get angry, and I, you know, and it was really intriguing listening to him. And I went up to him after class, and I said, have you ever thought about quit disagreeing with people? I mean, you know, if somebody tells you there is no God, you might take issue with it, but you are getting angry because they don't agree with what you think is your truth. So instead of that, why not seek to understand where they are coming from? And so that was really cool. I mean, I walked him through that, and he looked at me like I was like from Mars, but I said, really think about it, and if you want to focus on this, it'll help you, number one, have a greater impact in the world, which is what your calling is to have, because he was a Christian, right? And I said, number two, it'll release you from that pent-up anger that shoots out the minute somebody disagrees with you. I mean, we all have different backgrounds. We all have different reasons we think the way we do. And, you know, you haven't lived in their shoes, so maybe they have something to offer for you to have a greater understanding instead of thinking that you're the only one that's right in the world, right? So anyway, but that's a great principle. Seek first to understand and then to be understood. And, you know, it was a huge reality check for me when I went through that process of doing that, because we live our lives believing whatever we've accumulated is right and everything that's opposite to what we think is wrong. And that's not reality. That's not true. That's our truth, perhaps, but it's not the world truth. When we listen to somebody else communicate, we can learn and grow, and we can tweak our understandings because we haven't lived in their shoes. We haven't walked in their life. They've had different life experiences than we have, which tend to formulate our opinions and our beliefs, in addition to, of course, the families we grow up in. Very different. So public victory, seek first. And then the next one is synergize. Always like 1 + 1 = 3. You know, how do we build synergy in the world? Synergy is like creating, you know, massive results from limited input. And instead of fight or flight would be the opposite to it, or compromise. Let's be synergistic and synergize. And then the final habit, again, briefly going over the 7 habits. The 7th habit in Stephen Covey's incredible book is the habit of renewal, which really involves all of them. It's called sharpen the saw, and that's where we continue to what? It's a continuation of forever being in the mode of learning and educating ourselves and growing in ourselves. We never stop growing, and it's always continuing to use the concept of sharpening ourselves, continuing to add more knowledge, more information, and becoming better. So those are the 7 habits. And, of course, this book, 7 Habits, it's sold over 15 million copies. It's been chosen as the most influential business book of the 20th century by Forbes. I mean, this book, you know, it ranks like number one up there in terms of business impact on business and approaches, right? Very, very good. And even though the world's a very different place today, as Stephen Covey said, the principles in this book are universal type principles. They apply absolutely today. But in 2005, he came out with a new book called The 8th Habit, right? 8th Habit, From Effectiveness to Greatness. And so he was really intent on, you know, this is about inspiring others to find their voice. Now we can talk about what does it mean to find your voice, and he talks at length about, you know, finding your voice is about, you know, owning who you are and understanding what's important to you. That's who your voice is, owning who you are. Who are you really? When you look in the mirror, do you feel as if you're looking at a stranger, or do you feel you know yourself pretty well? Who are you, right? Yeah, and so it's important for us to understand that. Knowing your voice means being intentional. The way you do anything is the way you do everything. So how are we intentional? So if you want a, you know, rich, rewarding life, you can't be approaching life haphazardly, right? You have to be intentional about it. So knowing your voice means knowing your voice causes you to be intentional about actions that you take. And that's really cool about it. And making the commitment to live intentionally and authentically allows you to filter out other people's messages and their rules and their beliefs when they don't apply to you. So when you get off the wall things that come your direction, when you're living intentionally and authentically, you can easily filter those things out. You don't start running down another path and another path because you know your voice. You don't make them wrong. It's just you're following your voice, what matters in your life. So the question becomes, what would your life be like if you devoted the best of yourself to what really matters? Right? That's important. So, and that's, you know, you want to start living that life by visualizing what does that look like? What's your best life look like? And that's, so those are, you know, those are the concepts of the voice, living the voice. So that's what sparked Stephen Covey to write this new book, The Eighth Habit. And it really was a shift in our industrial age. And this is an important concept for all of us to recognize, because we're interfacing with it today in a gigantic way. And some of us might still be living in our past. You know, a lot of us grew up, and when we talked earlier about our aging downline and our, you know, people, our friendships and everything, you know, most of us grew up in a time like my dad, you know, came out of World War II and he started working, you know, a job. He went and got his, he had already gotten his engineering degree, and he took a job with Alice Chalmers, and it was, we were, you know, in an industrial age at that time, and there's a huge shift that has occurred. No longer is being effective as individual organizations enough in today's world. In other words, people are feeling a lack of fulfillment. There's an unrest. Hourly pay factory workers is not enough. People are feeling drawn to, you know, to their voice or their desires or their intentionality or creating something different. And in our era, people are required to build on and reach beyond just effectiveness. We used to talk about just being effective. So I gave this quote from in the outline today from Stephen Covey. He said, "The call for this new age is for greatness and a longing to gain fulfillment, experience passion, and to contribute to society. We see this drive in our country like never before." So people, that's the discontent that we see, because people feel stifled. We can talk about, oh, look at, we have such a low unemployment rate. Well, you know, 60% of the jobs don't even allow people to live a life of that they can admire or that they enjoy, because the pay is so low. And people are feeling unfulfilled. So there's this frustration that's looming out there in our country because we have shifted into a new era. So we need to, you know, we can do this, you know, independent of our job, you know, and or we can do it with the job. So we look at opportunities. How do we allow people to feel that gain, to have that fulfillment, experience passion, and contribute to society within the framework of perhaps align it with what you're doing in Manatech today, right? We have so many things to offer in that because of the personal growth that's involved in getting involved in this industry. We always emphasize people going through personal development classes and learning more about themselves and growing as human beings. We also make a huge contribution to society. I know a lot of you saw some of the Facebook Live posts from Friday. We had a phenomenal time Friday afternoon packing 55,000 meals to be shipped through our M5M Foundation. That's truly, you know, having your voice heard. That's truly fulfilling needs of other people. And there's incredible amount of passion amongst the group of people that were contributing that way, and I know a lot of you in the field who are just able to watch. You couldn't be here with us, but you are equally passionate about what we're accomplishing there. So there are ways that we want to incorporate that and be able to communicate that in our society today to people, because this is where we are today. People have a longing to gain a fulfillment, experience passion, and contribute to society. That kind of languaging when you're out there talking about your experience with Manatech and or whatever you're up to doing is critically important, because it's the attractor factors, understanding that's what's going on today in this new era. So Annie talks about, to reach this higher level of human genius and motivation requires a new mindset, a new skill set, a new tool set, right? The eighth habit is about finding our voice while helping others and discovering all of that. And I'll just give you a little bit. I'm going to read a little bit from the eighth habit book. It's a great book, and maybe at some point, I haven't outlined this on a Monday call because it's so massive. It'd probably take me six calls to go over it, but maybe that's something we do because it's really critical for us to understand. But he talks about the power of discovering our voice lies in the potential that was bequeathed us at birth. Buckminster Fuller said, "All children are born geniuses." I know there are a lot of people on the phone that really need to hear that. All children are born geniuses. 9,999 out of every 10,000 are swiftly, inadvertently de-geniusized by grown-ups. Isn't that amazing? So how do we lose that genius inside of us? We lose it when people tell us things like, you can't do that, you're not good enough, experiences in our life, environments that we're in. We get stuck. In fact, I was just talking to Lydia today about experiences in our own family. We get that generational bondage that's cast on us because our world is, when we're growing up as little kids, our world is just our immediate family life, our immediate experiences we have, and we somehow align that and define that as the world until we get to break out of it and break away from it. And when you have families that generationally live in the same place, generation after generation, they never go out and expand their thinking or their experiences to really have those differentiations that allow them to grow as people, they basically are wiped out. Their genius side is left untouched, undeveloped. And so we need to look at that, what's going on in our world and that. And, of course, a lot of you know the Marianne Williamson wonderful quote I always love to tell people is that our deepest, this is Marianne Williamson, our deepest fear is not that we're inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. And he says, we ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? In other words, the expectation is all of us have this enlightenment. And when we shrink, we cause the world to shrink. And we cause other people around us to be insecure as well. So we need to shine our light. We need our voice to be heard. We need to make that contribution, right? So important for us to find that voice. So what changes are we talking about? I'm going to outline back what changes we're talking about. Products. When we look at the 20th century, this is, again, Stephen Covey talking about this. He said, when you look at the 20th century, only 20 to 30% of value-added goods came from knowledge work. What does knowledge work mean? It means people that were intellectually making decisions as they were building products, okay? I mean, you look at the iPhone, classic result of intellectual expertise and advancement, right? But we look at products we make, rocking horses and beds and things like that and things, and the average during the Industrial Revolution, it was, if you ever worked in a factory, I don't know how many of you experienced that, but I did. I did that as I had the insight for some reason at 18 years old after my first year of college. I said, I had such a passion for people who were less fortunate at that age of my life. And maybe because I saw my dad grow up and we were a very poor family. So I had a passion to understand them better and understand. I knew that wasn't my life, what my life was going to be. So I took a factory job for that summer. And I remember I said, well, how do I go through this meaningless activity of just putting this piece in, securing it, passing it through the machine, coming back out, popping it out? So the only thing I could think of is just get competitive with it and try to see how many I could produce. And so I went through this. I was working the night shift from, I think it was 8 to 4, something like that, or 8 to 3. Anyway, so I said, okay, I'm going to compete with myself. I'm just going to try to make as many parts as I can and treat the machine with utmost respect so nothing breaks down. And I went to town, and for like two nights in a row, I mean, I was blowing it apart. And I got called in the office. Because why? Because the people on the day shift were finding out how much this woman was making on the night shift in terms of parts, and I was making them all look bad. And so I got called in. And there's nothing wrong with that because, you know what, they're going to work at their own pace. And I was just I wasn't trying to show up anybody. I was just trying to make the job something that was worth doing for me, because if I couldn't compete with myself and do that, it was so mundane, I wanted to accomplish something. So, but again, it was making a part and popping it in a machine, popping it out. There was no knowledge work in what I was doing, none whatsoever. So, but today we have 70, this is an incredible statistic, 70-80% of what we produce today are value-added goods. So incredible that can come from knowledge work. They come from our intellectual, our intuition that we put into it. So instead of suppressing minds of workers, we now have more of a release of human potential. So and Covey said that most people don't believe in themselves. He said most of the workers I saw, the reason they excelled at some level is because somebody else believed in them. So what does that tell about us? When we get people in our organization and we start working with them and we're as a leader, what are we doing? Our number one thing we can give to that person back isn't the knowledge, isn't the, you know, excitement, isn't all that stuff. It's that believing in them. Are we believing in others? And here's a little trap you might be falling in. If we don't believe in ourselves, how do we ever believe in other people? It's a great question. Answer that one for yourself and see if you go down a path somewhere. So truly, we need to have that depth of belief in ourselves for us to affect other people in a very positive way as well. So also, virtually everyone agreed that the average employee had a tremendous amount of talent. Every human being, just as Covey said in here, right, or Buckminster Fuller, he said 90,999 are born geniuses out of every 10,000, but swiftly and inadvertently de-geniusized by grown-ups, Buckminster Fuller. So he says virtually everyone agreed the average employee had a tremendous amount of talent, capacity, passion, intelligence, creativity that was untapped in their current job. So how do we tap into that? We want to be able to tap into that. And that is by presenting opportunities for people to really grow and know themselves better and do, you know, the kind of work and read the books and do the things they need to really expand their knowledge and their expertise and feel fulfilled. Because that's the idea, is a fulfilled. You want people to live a life of fulfillment, not feeling like they're used or abused through their entire life. Employees were alienated, and there was so much compartmentalization and lack of trust, disempowering them, as well as resulting in much frustration. And that's what happens. We do that to people. We don't help incite them to want to be something better and to achieve the greatness that's within them. Everyone is great. Everyone has that inherent greatness within. So how does the Seven Habits book interact with the Eighth Habit? So if you're looking at both of these books, Covey's books, of course, Covey talks about seven habits. Those are just basic general truths, even more critical today about being highly effective as we become more of an interactive society. Facebook, social media, everything, we're interacting all the time. And you can get on board with some of that stuff and you can see some of the garbage. I remember when I first got on Facebook, I don't know how many years ago Lydia started me, but it was late into the game. I had no desire to be a part of it, and finally she convinced me it was a way, something I needed to. And the nonsense that was posted, and I just kept looking at Lydia and I said, I think the first time I looked at Facebook, my stepdaughter posted that she was going to go out bra shopping today. And I was like, Lydia, really? Why do I need to know that she's doing it? I mean, it was just, it was like, geez, I don't need that. Keep me off of Facebook and social media. I don't need to know when people are going to go shopping. You know, so it was really kind of craziness. But it's an incredible vehicle today, though, for us to be able to empower other people. So I always suggest to people, I say, you know, look at what you're posting and start looking at how can I help people. And I know a lot of people are following us today because we're posting about, you know, true health and working out every morning. And we get some incredible responses back about how people are, you know, they just feel energized by our posts. And that's what we want to do. You want to, every time you post on Facebook, I would just suggest, or any social media whatsoever, I would suggest, how am I enhancing somebody else's life? How am I suggesting people be better or hear their voice be heard or, you know, feel more energized and or take more responsibility for their life or become more proactive? What am I doing to do that? And if you think about that, I think you'll have a greater impact on those mediums because people will start being attracted to you because you're giving them insight they may not have, right? And so all of those things are critical today, much more critical because we're getting lost in bra shopping, if you don't mind me saying that, which is probably 80% of what happens on these social mediums. It's just nonsense stuff that really doesn't grow you or contribute to you in a way to allow you to become a better person. To find your voice as well as having a unique calling to inspire others to find theirs is a whole nother dimension. That should be our goal, is, you know, find our voice so that we can go out and inspire others to find their voice. It's about planting in them, what do you really want to do? And I remember you know, like when my kids came out of college and I looked at them, I said, don't look for a job. What is really your heart's desire? What do you really want to do? What do you want to accomplish? Where do you want to be 10 years from now? Don't look at today. Look at where do you want to be 10 years from now? You know, and it's a hard thing to do. And it's a hard thing for a parent to tell a child because you want them to get off the payroll and get on with their lives, right? But it's about thinking deep and giving time and energy into what that is and what your dream could be. And so, you know, and a lot of you know my two stepdaughters became millionaires in their 30s because of being driven to do something unique and entrepreneurial and pursue a passion, a strong passion of theirs, versus being stuck in even jobs today that might give them some intellectual pursuit, but it's still a job. It still is somebody else's dictating to you. And I'm not saying there aren't people that are definitely built for jobs. My husband's a classic. He would die as an entrepreneur because he needs guidance on telling what to do and when to do it and giving instruction. You know, he doesn't have that leadership or passion or drive within him to, you know, come up with some new idea, or, you know, the fear would overwhelm him. But so many people are looking today. We have a whole group of people called millennials that are all in this realm. They don't want a job. They want something different. They want to make a difference in the world. They want to be significant. They're very involved in so many different things because they're driven by significance. How does this fit in the direct selling industry in terms of all the seven habits? Because we talked all about that. Well, frustrated people feeling used and unappreciated, underutilized, tend to be the ones that are looking. In other words, when people are looking for something, when you find somebody that's looking for something different, they're the people that are underutilized, unappreciated. And so how do we build that into what we have to offer them? You know, I think we're not building the dream well enough. And the dream isn't about money. The dream is about being what? An entrepreneur. About taking back control of your own life and building your life. Like, here's a, you know, build them a picture of, like, here's a canvas and you get to paint on it. Over the next 5 years, you build a painting of what your life's going to be. You're an artist creating what that life's going to be. I mean, build that vision for people. Are some people going to look at you and go, oh my gosh, I need somebody to tell me what to do all the time? They're stuck in a paradigm. Can you help them out of that paradigm? Maybe over time, but maybe today's not their day for it. You wonder why sometimes people reject you. It's because they can't see it. They're so insecure. They allow fear to get in the way and, you know, false expectations appearing real. I mean, it's just they don't know enough. But that's when you can, you know, use other mechanisms, books, you know, get them part of calls that can hopefully break that down to allow them the freedom to be able to step out in faith and belief and trust that they too are a genius that's just been hampered by their environment. So let's get the genius out, right? People are looking for some kind of entrepreneurial endeavor due to disenfranchisement, right? They're broken spirit at their jobs, you know, a lot of that because they feel, again, we have a society where people want to feel fulfillment. They want to feel that they're tapped into, that they're appreciated, that their knowledge is being used. So, and a passion towards a greater good. So those are all people that are trying to find their voice. We can help. What's truly important to you, social cause, you know, whatever it is that's important to them, obviously, you know, with the Manatech Business Opportunity, you have a lot of opportunity to share social cause. Again, what we experienced on Friday was huge from a perspective of communicating that outward to people about who we're about, that we really have a deep-seated heart for people less fortunate. We care about these children that in this 21st century shouldn't be dying of malnutrition when more food is thrown away every day in the United States than would feed every single one of these kids. Did you know that? The statistics of how much food we throw away in the United States is overwhelming. So why can't we do something about it, right? And that's what we're doing. We're stepping up to play that game to be better. The company needs to not only have a good compensation plan when you're looking at something like a direct sales, but also have a cause. This is Stephen Covey's language. He's talking this. He's saying that we need to have that cause. We need to have a cause, something that triggers value to people. Financial success is secondary. Primary is character and contribution. So it's about character growth. What do we have to offer? Incredible character growth. I mean, this industry changed me immensely from where I was before because I didn't have any of this kind of education. I hadn't gone through massive self-development courses and reading literally hundreds of books. I read hundreds of legal books, but not, you know, books about people and how we behave and how we're trained up. I realized what kind of a background I had, but I never evaluated it and how it formed me into who I was at that moment. And I really had a choice about who I wanted to be. Very distinct difference, right? We can choose into who we want to be. We don't have to be dictated to by our upbringing unless we just never evaluate it, never look back, never have a sense of there's something greater out there. What are the four dimensions that make up the whole person paradigm? Because Covey talks about the whole person paradigm in his book. And he said the fundamental reality is that human beings are not things needing to be motivated and controlled. They are four-dimensional body, mind, heart, and spirit. The body has basically deals with physical and economic side. In other words, what's our health, our physical intelligence? Is okay, so, you know, we love this one because this is what we talk about in our nutritional products every day, right? Our health, our physical intelligence, working on our minds and helping that with good nutrients as well. And then as well as our economic well-being, that's the ability to make whatever income you choose to make. It's still there, people. Some of you have kind of drifted or you've lost. But each one of us know it's there, and each one of us can participate in that. In fact, you know, I love what Richard Brooke has been doing. I mean, we have this capacity to go out there and take on the world, and yet we're stifled because of self-doubts, whatever we put, oh, it didn't work this. You know, then you adopt a new plan, a new approach. But most of it has to do with self-discipline and perhaps better languaging. And we're putting that in place right now as we speak. So it's how do we do this? But even understanding what I'm training on this morning will help you have better languaging with people that you talk to because you want to be inspirational to them, allow them to see the capacity they have to really grow as a person through this vehicle. They're not getting any of that in their current job environment or what they're doing. So the body, okay, what do? We have terrific products that help support the body, so the physical needs, the health is there, and the economic is there as well. Number two is the mind has to do with the development of one's talents. And again, we spend a lot of time, educational classes, Monday calls, you know, you have other calls by different presidentials throughout Manatech that really help grow you as a person and push yourself, but it's about associating with people that you honor and respect who really can take you to another level and help you deal with things that are roadblocks in your heart. Your heart deals with our natural inclinations and passions, and that's where I come from. It's about my heart. I just want to, in every relationship, I always want to share my heart because contribution is my number one core value, and that means I care about anybody, anywhere, any place. I just have an endless caring for people and helping them step up and play a bigger role because each one of us, as I truly believe Buckminster Fuller's quote, we're all geniuses. We've just been buried under adults who have just quashed that genius mode within us. So let's dig out from under that. It's like being buried and we're digging through the dirt to get to air again so that we can thrive. And then the spirit has to do with the meaningfulness of the product or service or provide and how it meets a human need. It has to do with total integrity and a level of peace in our conscience. And, you know, I couldn't have greater peace with the product that we're using. And my spirit's filled with my, you know, my faith and my love, and that's why I do what I do. So that peace of conscience is so much more important than peace of mind, as it gives you a sense of calling. And if we have that sense of calling, that's what will drive us. And that's what sustains us through the ups and the downs and the highs and the lows, because we're called to do this. We're called to do this. And Covey believed that we are all in search of our calling, our work we were born with to carry out, our voice. And direct sales works for so many, especially if it's in a field where you're truly changing people's lives. And I think when you talk to people that market eyelashes, they think they're changing people's lives. I may not agree with that, but they do. I mean, and we're changing it in a very significant way. I mean, health, if you don't have health, what do you have? I think you're really at a loss. Life is short for you. So health is so critical, and we have such phenomenal products that support that. What a blessing it is that we have all of that in our lives. So we have something. There's no question that what we're doing, and then the M5M program, of course, too, is the thing that really fills our soul. Finding your voice versus finding your why. Covey was asked that in this interview, and he basically kind of said, basically they're kind of the same thing. You know, your why, your voice, the why is what makes you cry. Your voice, what is it that's so important to you? What is it so important? And it doesn't have to be like one item. It can be, something. Mine is all about contribution and understanding my core value. When I find myself in contribution, I am totally fulfilled. So it's about how do I contribute? Well, I do it 100. I have a charity. I do coaching. I love my coaching programs today. I'm going on a professional speakers tour next year to talk about mindset and how we're stuck with mindsets. I mean, any way I can contribute, any way I can put forth the knowledge and understanding that I've been gifted with is just a blessing to me. So we each have different ways that we look at this, right? What's our why? But we need to know what that why is. We need to be clear. We need to be clear on finding that why, finding your voice, because it's what sustains us. There always are going to be hardships and screw-ups and mess-ups and things that fall apart and things that don't go right and blah, 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 and that's called living in this world we're in today. They will always be present. What makes you the person you are is how you respond to it. So are you going to allow others to rob you of your voice or your why? That's the question. Don't ever let that happen. No one has a right to strip that from you or take that away from you. And this too will pass. When there are things that don't, some of us remember the Texas AG case and all those kind of things. How many people fled? But there are so many of us that stayed. Why? Because this too will pass. This too will pass. And it's not about us. It's about, what's transpired. What is about us is our choice to not let something else, grab us. And I know people that fled that time, at that point in time, which is about, I don't know, how many years ago was it? I can't even recall, maybe 10 years ago or so, 11 years ago that we had the big problem. Yeah. But some of those people have been in 8 different network marketing companies. Really? And I just keep thinking. And people sometimes marvel at me and they go, Mary Jo, you're still with Manatech. And I go, I'd never stop being with it. I mean, I didn't get into this to make money. I got into this because I saw a miracle result in my father's health. And I know that I know, because now I've seen massive numbers of them over the years, and I continue to help people with their health. So nothing's going to derail me, not even maybe a company screw up, something that goes wrong, blah, 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 blah. Are you kidding me? All I try to do is help the company be the best it can be. That's my commitment. And is it frustrating at times? Absolutely. But you know what? They're human beings. My expectation of them being something other than human beings is unrealistic. So what we just like me, I don't need somebody breathing on my back to be perfect every day of my life, right? That's an uncomfortable feeling. So it's just so if we can't, lean on somebody, if we're not going to lean on somebody to be perfect every day because we don't want that expectation on ourselves, how do we show up? We come from contribution. How do I help make it better? How can I make things better? So that's what it is. And the last item that we talk about is the secret to overcoming fear. Stephen Covey talked about that. And, this is really true for people who just get started in the business. There are a lot of fear. People are fearful of leaving a job and starting becoming an entrepreneur, or stepping out in faith, there are a lot of things that we have in our head that are fear. And we know, for those of you who are, biblically, in tune, that it says in there, fear not, and because we have trust and faith in something greater than us. It's not, fear comes from a human response. So we know it's human. But what's important for us isn't so much of isolating and removing fear or the absence of fear. It's about displacing it with something that's so much more important than any little fear we could have. And that's what I ask you to do every day of your life. When you step out and you go, oh, I'm going to go and share with some people. Oh, I don't know. What if they say no? I don't want rejection, blah, blah. Oh, my gosh, get out of your own way. Who are you to carry those fears? Who are you to deny those five people today who really are looking for exactly what you have to offer? Who are you to sit back and say, oh, I talked to five people and everyone said no. What? Just step up and what can I do differently? How can I be better? How can I analyze it? How can I be more of stepping into seek first to understand and then be understood? How can I step into that incredible character trait that Stephen Covey talked about? Because that'll make all the difference in the world with somebody you work with. Seek first to understand. So, but we got to put that fear aside because there's such a greater calling on all of our lives. And then I added that Susan Jeffers book is a great book I use with people that deal with fear. I love it. It says, feel the fear and do it anyway. Right? Yeah, that's it. Okay, people, hopefully you enjoyed it. I love Stephen Covey. I think he has a lot of great things to teach us and train us on so that we move forward and be the best we can be, because get back to that Buckminster Fuller quote, to know that you were born a genius. You weren't the one out of the 1,000 that wasn't a genius. You're one of the 10,000. You're one of the 9,999 geniuses that were born, right? And now let's show up like that. Okay, everyone, any last-minute comments or questions before we go? I just want to, again, say happy Thanksgiving to all of you and take it to heart, see how this call might be able to change your life or cause you to look at it a little differently and move forward in a different way, but you're all incredibly capable of fulfilling every dream you have in your life. It's just, are you willing to do what it takes? And that's where you have to start challenging yourself, because don't sell yourself short. You're all capable. Anyone? Okay. Happy Thanksgiving, you guys. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you next Monday. Bye, everybody.